having lunch,
okay.
And we talked about science.
We're ready to start taping. Esmeralda?
All right. Okay. Bienvenidos, everyone. Welcome to Reading with Las Comadres. I'm Esmeralda Santiago, and I thank you so much for joining us on our very special teleconference on the eve of Children's Book Day. Reading with Las Comadres is a partnership between the American Association of Publishers, Publishing Latino Voices, and Borders Bookstores. In addition to the teleconference, Las Comadres has book clubs in select cities. So if you're interested in our clubs, or if you would like to organize one in your city or your area, please do get in touch with us through our website, lascomadres.org. Reading with Las Comadres teleconferences and book clubs were started in an effort to encourage readers to look for books by Latino authors. Through these books, readers will learn more about our culture and heritage. Gracias and thanks to the many participants from all over the United States and Puerto Rico who join us every month for these wonderful teleconferences. These teleconferences are open to everyone. We hope to create a place where anyone can explore the Latino writer's mind and soul portrayed through our books. We do feature a different guest interviewer in conversation with authors. Do stay tuned about upcoming teleconferences at the end of this one. Tonight, it is my delight and pleasure to introduce Macarena Salas, who will interview our guests. Macarena Salas is a bilingual editor and translator. She began her editorial career at Scholastic in 1988 as a freelance editor of children's books. In 1999, she joined Symphony full-time as an editor, and in 2000, she became associate director in charge of Spanish publishing and Club Leo, the Spanish language book club, which is distributed through schools nationwide. In 2003, she became editorial director. Since the summer of 2008, she has been working independently. Macarena has authored several picture books for children under her pseudonym Ana Galán, and she has a website, www.anagalan.com. Among these books is No is No, Si is Yes, Da is Look, Libro is Book, La Bruja Maruja, Hilario el Veterinario, Amigas para Siempre, Guide to Friendship, and Un ABC Animal. Prior to joining Scholastic, Macarena worked for 6 years in the publishing industry, translating, copy editing, and proofreading children's books and text programs for Sur Editorial Group. She also was a practicing veterinarian from 1987 to 1992. A native of Oviedo, Spain, she holds a doctorate in veterinary medicine from the Universidad Complutense of Madrid. Macarena, her husband, and three children reside in New York. Bienvenida, Macarena. It's nice to hear from you again.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here with all of you. Esmeralda, it's so great to hear from you again. I want to welcome all of you. Before we start, I wanted to say this is such an exciting opportunity for me. I was telling my children and my husband, today, by the way, is my husband's birthday, and they were asking me, what is it that you're going to do now? I said, well, we're going to have an interview with an author and a specialist in bilingual education, and probably like around 60 people, mostly women, will be listening. And my husband looked at me and he said, you mean listening, 60 women, and not being able to talk? So he said, how do you do that? So he was all jealous. But I do want to make this not a one-way conversation. I want to make it open to everyone in the audience. So grab a pen and a piece of paper. If you do have a burning question that you may want to ask any of our guests today, please email me. I believe you have my Optoline email, but I'll also give you my Yahoo email in case it works better. It's anagln@yahoo.com. And if I get the questions on time, I'll ask them to our guests. So let me introduce you our wonderful guests today. This is so exciting. Pat Mora. Hola, Pat.
Hola.
There she is. Pat Mora is an award-winning poet and author of children's books, and young adult and adult books too, and is founder of the Family Literacy Initiative, El Día de los Niños, El Día de los Libros, Children's Day, Book Day, now housed at the American Library Association. The much honored Mora is a popular national speaker shaped by the U.S.-Mexico border where she was born and spent much of her life. She speaks often at conferences, universities, and schools about her books, literacy, and leadership. A former consultant, museum director, university administrator, teacher, and the mother of three adult children, she lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's my pleasure to introduce all of you to Pat. Our second guest is Dr. Ortiz, Alba Ortiz. Dr. Alba Ortiz holds a joint appointment as professor and coordinator of the Multicultural Special Education Program in the Department of Special Education and professor and coordinator of the Bilingual Bicultural Education Program in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Texas at Austin. She's also the director of the College of Education's Office of Bilingual Education. At the University of Texas, she's the holder of the President's Chair for Education Academic Excellence. Some of her most recent publications focus on disproportionate representation of culturally and linguistically diverse learners in remedial and special education programs. Bienvenida, Alba.
Gracias.
So there she is, too. Now, let's start this conversation. What I want to do is I want to ask both of them, not the same question, but I'm not going to interview first Pat and then Alba. I'm going to mix all my questions with both of them. So, Pat, let me start with you. And Alba, you too. You can start thinking about it. Tell us, what was your childhood like? In that sense, I want to have a snapshot of your childhood. Where were you born? Did you grow up in a bilingual family? What was your first language? Can you please talk to us about your childhood?
Well, I was blessed to have a fabulous childhood. All of my grandparents were born in Mexico, came to El Paso at the time of the Mexican Revolution. My dad came when he was 3. My mom was born in El Paso. I grew up in a totally bilingual household. Much of my life, my grandmother lived with us. She spoke no English, so it is thanks to her, that I'm probably as bilingual as I am. But I also had, and I'm the oldest of 4 children, I also had a wonderful aunt whom we called Lobo, and I've written a lot about her in children's books and adult poetry. And she did not know English when she came as a young woman. And by the time I was a little girl, she would sit and read Nancy Drew books to mysteries with me on one side and my sister on the other. So I grew up very rich in terms of languages, very rich in terms of hearing stories, but also with an exceedingly bright mother who was articulate in English and Spanish and always had books in the house.
Oh, that's wonderful. Alba, what about you? Did you grow up in a bilingual household?
Actually grew up in a Spanish language household. My grandparents are all from Mexico. My mother came to the U.S., as we say, not during normal working hours, when she was 12. And my father was actually born in Texas, and he is a high school graduate. My mother doesn't really have very much education. She was a migrant laborer. And out of respect for my mother, we always spoke Spanish at home. My schooling was all in English, and so I probably speak English better than Spanish. I think I speak Spanish well, although my mother says I can sometimes be embarrassing in my grammar. And so I have had a very similar experience, a very rich home in terms of relationships, one in which there was a lot of talk. Always both my parents were articulate, primarily in Spanish, and I'm the sixth of eight children. So my home was bilingual once, you know, kids got in school and began to learn English. But in terms of my parents, my parents spoke Spanish at home.
Wow. So let's go to the other side of the equation. Both of you are mothers. Am I right, Alba, Pat?
Yes.
Alba, you have children?
I do. They are stepchildren.
Wonderful. Now, what language do you speak to them? Do you speak to them in English and Spanish? What's your language at home?
English.
I was going to say, this is Alba. In terms of language at home, it was obviously English because my stepchildren began actually as monolingual English speakers, but we really encouraged them to study Spanish. And because my family is primarily Spanish-speaking, they spend a lot of time in monolingual Spanish environments. So both of them speak Spanish, although I wouldn't say that either one of them has the highest level of proficiency.
Great, great. Now, both Pat and Alba, what do you think are the advantages of growing up bilingual? Let's start with Pat.
Well, I tell students, you know, that as a writer, it gives me twice as many words to play with.
And
it's the truth. You know, and I particularly love to tell students who are bilingual or who are learning English, you know, that when I visit campuses, monolingual English students will say to me, oh, I wish I knew Spanish so that I could weave it into my work.
Right.
So I'm being very honest with them, you know, when I say that. But today, from a practical point of view, of course, and this will only increase, it's a huge job advantage. But I also firmly believe that languages are a special way of seeing the world, and it gives me two ways to see the world.
Right. Alba, what do you have to say about that?
I couldn't agree more with all of those points. I would add, I think, just a couple of things. One is that you have different ways of viewing the world, obviously, and I think that being bilingual gives you a much better understanding of different cultures and the subtle differences in the way people interact and the way they interact. My husband and I were having a disagreement over who broke the telephone charger, and he finally, in frustration, says to me, I know, you're saying that it broke itself. And I said, exactly, se quebró. So you don't really understand the culture, I think, unless you really have some language skills to go with them. I think I would also say that there is a real advantage to growing up bilingual, because I think you have a better chance of acquiring and maintaining your language skills. We all know people that take foreign language classes. Almost every high school and college student has been in a foreign language class, but we probably know very few people who became bilingual through that process. So I think there's a real advantage to growing up bilingual. And the other thing is that it gives you a way to really be in touch with who you are. What Pat started out talking about, you know, her rich family environment and her aunt and her grandparents. I think it's really sad when we have children who have never had a conversation with their grandparents or their aunts and uncles, particularly if they're from other countries. So there are some real advantages.
Absolutely, absolutely. Pat, in your books, I know, if not all, most of your children's books, and they're wonderful. I had the opportunity of acquire some of your titles when I worked for Scholastic, and we offered them to the school market, and I really loved them. I think my favorite still is The Night the Moon Fell, La Noche que Cayó la Luna, illustrated by Domi. And I see that many of your books for children, your picture books, are inspired. That's what I see from your books, from your culture, from your experiences. Is that right? What inspires you when you write?
Well, I'm going to be visiting a school here in North Carolina tomorrow, you know, and it's one of the questions, of course, particularly students who are beginning to write themselves, you know, ask. And that's whether it's a second grader, but graduate students ask the same question of writers, of course. Where do you get your ideas? And I talk about family and culture as a huge source of inspiration. And the other place for me, really, is I am a daughter of the desert. You know, I'm from the Chihuahua Desert, and I love the desert, and I will probably never tire of writing about it. So those would probably be two of the richest sources. Of course, I write a lot about women, too. Women are a great source of inspiration to me.
Yeah, we are. We are great. Alba, back to you. Wait a minute. I'm reading at my notes here, so I'm not improvising, everybody. And I want to mix the questions. I don't want just to focus on one subject or one book for now or one person. So, Alba, you studied a lot about bilingual education. What made you start studying that? What brought you to that field?
You know, I actually started out as a special educator, and all of my training is as a special educator. I was a speech pathologist and specialized in learning disabilities. But my very first university job was at San Jose State University, where the bilingual ed teacher training program director resigned, and the dean asked me to run that program. And I did I agreed to do that while they searched for the bilingual ed director, but it took them about 3 years to find someone. So in the interim, I decided that I needed to learn something about bilingual education and English as a second language programs, because I had been educated entirely in English. I was educated just before bilingual education, the Bilingual Education Act was passed. So it was kind of by the back door. I began to visit bilingual education programs, English as a second language programs, and I saw that in many places children were really being poorly educated. There weren't enough bilingual education programs available. So that experience piqued my interest, and that was like in 1975, and that's essentially what I've done ever since then. I still specialize in children with disabilities, but I know that a lot of the answers to those children's problems really lie in making sure that they have access to quality general education programs like bilingual education in
ESL.
So I really fell into it.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this really relates to what I wanted to talk about now, which is El Día de los Niños, Día de los Libros. And obviously the best person to talk to us about that such special day is Pat. Pat, can you please tell us what it is? What is El Día de los Niños, El Día de los Libros?
Well, the idea came to me, and I always say came to me from above. You know, many times we get hit on the head with a good idea, so we can't totally take credit for it. But the idea came to me in 1996 when I first heard about this celebration in Mexico on April 30th of El Día del Niño. And it was a time when I had written a few children's books, and I could see that books written by Latinos were not that popular. And the sad thing is that sometimes they're not that popular with Latinos. And so I thought, and I was aware, too, of what a literacy crisis we have, not only within the Latino community, but a literacy crisis nationally, too, because to really participate actively in the public life of the United States, text literacy is pretty essential. So the idea came to me of combining the idea of celebrating children, and I thought Latinos were the people to bring that to the table, you know, that we want to celebrate children, but combining it with literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, you know, some wonderful librarians in Reforma, which is an affiliate of the American Library Association, a very diverse group of librarians who all are committed to serving Latinos and the Spanish-speaking. And they really helped what we call DIA grow. And this is our 13th anniversary tomorrow. And over 400 libraries have registered their events around the country. And, of course, many places don't register the events. So we would like to think that more than that will happen. I would want to add two things. We grew, as any project does, and so we like to say that every day is el Día de los Niños, el Día de los Libros, and on or about April 30th, all over the country, we celebrate a year of doing this important work. And the other thing is we've really grown to stress family literacy. It is about families celebrating children and books together.
Yeah, so important. Something that caught my attention here, you said that many Latinos, how did you phrase it, many Latinos were not even supporting the Latino authors. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's a very complex issue, but certainly a statistic we can all think about, since we're talking about children's books tonight, is 1 in 4 children under 5 today is Latina in this country,
okay.
Latina, Latino, right? 1 in 5. Yet less than 2% of the children's books published are by or about Latinos. And nobody is banging those doors down saying we need more. And in fact, from the publishing side, you know, publishers would tell us they do so-so.
Right, they don't sell as well, and I hate to say that, but I was on the publishing side.
Sometimes they weren't as successful.
Sometimes I think the publishers didn't put the same resources they put for other English titles, but I don't want to get into that. I can get in trouble here.
Well, you know, I was going to add that also in part, I think, we don't do a very good job of communicating to parents the value of developing their children's appreciation for literacy in languages other than English. And it's tied, I think, in part to the fact that bilingual education as a program area is also oftentimes disadvantaged by public perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So parents internalize at times that if they do things in their native language with their children, that will somehow interfere with their ability to learn English, and so they are reticent to do things like reading to their kids.
Absolutely.
I totally agree that many times I've been to book fairs where Latino parents are looking for books to buy, and when you ask them, why don't you buy books in Spanish, they say, because my daughter needs to learn English.
Right.
What would you say to those parents?
Well, I would say to them that their native language, the language of the parent, is the foundation for English, and that when we look at kids, the kids that do best in school are the ones that have really good native language skills, and when they have those skills, they acquire English much more readily and to a much higher level of proficiency. That's why so many immigrant children outperform kids that are born in this country, because they come in with good native language skills.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really appreciate about PAC's bilingual books is that they're a really clear reinforcement of the value of literacy in two languages. And so parents can use the Spanish or the English to help develop kids' appreciation for literacy. So I would tell parents, you know, read to your kids, read to them in your native language. If you don't read, talk to your kids, talk to them in the language that you are proficient in, and it's that that's going to help them do well in school.
Pat, would you like to add anything?
Well, I agree totally. And what I recently discovered, and it was sort of a discovery, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to teachers and librarians, and I treasure them because they are very undervalued, you know, and it's hard work. But I happened to ask a group in Phoenix, and I said to them, you know, forget about the politically correct thing to say. I just want you to tell me from your heart, how do you feel about bilingual books? And a brave teacher in the front row said, they intimidate me.
Right.
And I had never totally thought about it.
You know, about 90% of the teachers in this country are probably monolingual English.
Mm-hmm.
That is not predicted to change. Abba would know better than I do. So how do we work with the teachers to help them see the value of the bilingual books and how to partner with a Spanish-speaking parent, with a child from the sixth grade who would love to come in and read the Spanish, but we may have to give more concrete help.
Right. I have your book in front of me, Pat, Book Fiesta. What a wonderful book. If the audience hasn't seen it, please, I do encourage you to go get it because it's the most beautiful book ever, illustrated by Rafael Lopez. And he is such a wonderful. Don't you agree, Pat, that the
I love his work.
So great. And it is a bilingual book, and it's a celebration about reading, reading everywhere, reading in the train, reading in a long submarine, en un submarino largo, or floating in a hot air balloon, o paseando en un globo enorme. And this is a bilingual book, a beautiful, gorgeous bilingual book. Like every spread could make like a beautiful poster for your home. Okay, so now I'm a teacher. I get this book. It's a bilingual book. I don't speak Spanish, or maybe I do. How do I read this? Do I read the Spanish first and then the English? What do I do with this, Pat?
Well, I'm going to be very curious to hear what Alba said because in many ways she's more of an expert on this question than I am. But my inclination and what I have always heard is to read it in one language first. I have seen some very effective teachers perhaps give the little ones a little job to keep them on, you know, focused. Like in that book, you have that nice repetition of dun dun. So I might put my hand out and say, now, I'm going to read this, and every time I put my hand out, you say together with me, dun dun. So kids love to participate in reading, you know, whether they actually have the book in front of them or not. So I'd probably read it, you know, to them all in one language, having them participate, and then I would move to the other language.
Mm-hmm. Alba, do you agree?
I totally agree because I think partly we have to think about what we're trying to accomplish. So if I wanted children to learn English, I would probably read the book to them all the way through in Spanish first so that they know what the story is about. And then I would go back and I would use the English text as part of their English as a second language lesson. I think it's a really good idea to keep the languages separate because if you're doing them both at once, if kids don't speak English, they'll only listen to the Spanish. If they don't speak Spanish, they'll only listen to the English because they know the translation is coming. So I totally agree with Pat. It's great in terms of English as a second language because the book is so well illustrated that the pictures help the kids understand or remind them, you know, what the story's about, so it supports their English comprehension, or their Spanish comprehension if they're developing Spanish skills. I also think this is the kind of book that teachers, if they're not bilingual, can read to kids in English, and they can ask parents or siblings or, you know, older students to read to them, as you were suggesting, in Spanish. So it's a great approach. The other thing, as I said earlier, is it so clearly communicates to kids the value of two languages.
It's so beautiful. I'm really looking at it, and it's just a gorgeous book. And if Adriana Dominguez is there, she was the editor of this book, and I want to congratulate her on right here now because she did a fabulous job, too.
Now, she's off in Italy, of course, but we will hope that she will hear the tape.
Yeah,
because she deserves a lot of credit for this book.
Yeah, she did a great job as an editor. Now, I'm not a teacher anymore. Now I'm a parent. And I either don't speak English or Spanish. Or
let's say I'm a Spanish-speaking parent with limited English. Should I still read this book in English to my cat, Pat?
Well, one of the things I love to say to parents who are monolingual Spanish, because, of course, you know, I have a particular interest in those parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I say to them is to always make writing, always make reading a special time, that it is never a punishment. You know, it's always a special time. So maybe we get in the habit that every evening we sit together to look at our books together. And to say to your child, you know, in Spanish, quiero que me leas tu libro. So I am showing an interest in what my child is learning, you know, if let's say my child is learning English at school. And so I'm asking my child to read it to me, and I'm listening, I'm looking at the pictures, but then I'm going to ask my child to tell me in Spanish what was the book about. So if a child doesn't read Spanish and they're not in a bilingual program, I always tell them it's an intellectual feat to be able to read it in one language and then to be able to tell your parent in the other language. And what the child is after is your time. That's what kids want, our time, our attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alba, you have anything to add?
No, I would agree with that. I think if the parent isn't comfortable with their English, I would tell them that their contribution is reading the Spanish book to them, and the conversations that they have with their kids about the content. And I think Pat is right. They can listen to the kids read in English. Kids will have access to so many people that could read to them in English that I think we need to remove the guilt from parents in terms of feeling that they have to contribute to that English development.
Right.
I would be hesitant to push parents to doing things in English if they themselves are not comfortable in English.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And then, you know, the thing is the kids start correcting you. And that's so annoying because my kids did that to me. Like, Mom, it's not acorn, it's acorn. He's like, okay, you read it yourself. Bring me Spanish book. I won't read to you in English again. they made fun of my accent all the time.
Well, and I think that kids need to see parents model, you know, the reading and writing I think Pat was suggesting, and we don't want them to model a struggling reader. And so,
oh, good
if
point.
They can't read,
good point.
Tell them
yeah.
to talk. To the kids
right.
about, you know, they could talk about the pictures, you know, and if that's all they did, they would themselves weave a great oral story. So,
right. Or they can ask their kids to read the book to them, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
And I would tell parents, you need to be reading to your kids from the day they're born.
Right. What do you tell, let me tell you a very short story about my son, when he was in preschool, he always came home, and I would say, so how was your day? And he said, oh, I got time out. I said, you got time out? Yeah, I did. Why? Because I was singing. He's like, oh, that's weird. So I spoke to his teacher. I said, listen, why is my son getting time out almost every single day for singing? And she said, well, the thing is, when we have story time, he doesn't listen, so he starts singing, and that's very disruptive. So we give him a timeout, and I said to her, I said, but my son doesn't speak English, so it's very hard for a kid to stay still listening to something that you don't understand. And her answer to me was, well, in this country, we speak English, so you should start speaking English to your child. All right, I need your reaction to that. But
you should have had the conversation with the teacher in Spanish.
Because unfortunately, you know, this is happening all over.
Okay.
It not just happened to me, and I'm sure many other parents have had the same experience. What do you tell teachers that don't understand what it is to be growing up bilingual?
Well, I do think, you know, for those of us who have some of the advantages of what I call middle-class protection, you know, we may feel, as you did, more comfortable going in and saying to the teacher, you know, we both care about this student. How can we resolve this? I am, of course, also a believer that if you didn't get anywhere, you would say, well, I think I'm going to talk to the principal because we need to come up with a better solution. I have a particular interest in parents who are low income, who feel uncomfortable going to the school,
mm-hmm.
Who feel that the teachers know best. How we help those parents realize their rights and that the schools belong to them too. But you are absolutely right that this is an issue that many, many children are encountering. And we need to encourage not only teachers, but I would say teacher preparation programs to prepare our new teachers for the very diverse classrooms that they're going to be teaching in.
And both of you are doing that, right? Alva, you do the training to teachers as well, right?
Absolutely. I think, the answer is, as Pat suggests, in changing our teacher preparation programs. At UT Austin, we have just implemented a requirement that every undergraduate exit our program with at least an English as a second language certificate.
That's amazing. Amazing.
That is amazing. But it's a clear recognition that more than half of the kids in our schools are language minorities, so that if we're going to produce high achievement, teachers have to be ready to do that. So I think that more universities need to take that step. I also think professional development is critical.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as people may want to argue against the No Child Left Behind Act, which has a lot of limitations, one of the things that it has done is made teachers accountable for the success of English language learners, so teachers are much more willing to try to learn about the second language acquisition process and what's involved there. So I have some hope that it's going to be a slow road to travel, but that we are going to make some progress in that area, because in the meantime, kids are being punished for the fact that mm-hmm. they're in the process of learning English, and it really does affect your self-concept and your sense of competence. I had a parent tell me that they put their child in the bilingual ed program, and after a couple of weeks, the child came home and said, I don't want to be in the program. It's the program for dummies. And so, you know, when you mm-hmm. have that attitude present in schools, you know that there's a lot of reform that has to occur. So I think we really need to focus on preparing teachers and protecting children
Right, because the thing is, many people, when they first come to the States and they don't speak English, you may look dumb. You're not. You just don't understand the language and you can't communicate, and then your personality is gone. You can't express yourself. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating for us adults, so I can't imagine what it is for a kid.
Right.
I'm a special educator, and one of the things that we really work on is helping teachers understand exactly the point that you're making, that, you know, when you have children that have language or learning disabilities, they have a tendency to have limited language skills, low vocabulary, poor comprehension, poor achievement. And that those are signs of disability. But when you have a second language learner, they have exactly the same characteristics if they're being taught in English. They have limited language skills, poor vocabulary. They can't follow instructions. And so they wind up oftentimes getting referred to special education because teachers think that those behaviors reflect a disability, as opposed to understanding that the students are in the process of acquiring
That's sad.
And that is sad. And so, you know, that's why we have to do so much work in terms of preparing teachers in general to provide the support that second language learners need so they can do well academically, and to help them understand and be able to tell the difference between one who's struggling because they don't speak English versus one who's struggling because they really do have a disability in play.
I know this is not, like, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but Can you share with us a special moment that you've had during one of your school visits, or some moment that you remember with a child, or can you think of?
Yes, absolutely. And there are many, you know, there are many. And it's one of the great rewards of writing children's books. I mean, I love writing for adults and teens, but, you know, little ones have a way of sort of showing you their heart. They don't hold back. And so a very special moment occurred, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago in a school outside of Denver. And it was a really special visit because the teachers knew that I had written this book called Pablo's Tree about a boy who is adopted, and his grandfather plants a tree for him. Mm-hmm. And so they planted a tree for my visit. And wow. So it was a great, they had mariachis outside in the morning. It was just a lovely visit. And each of the classes had decorated the door of their classroom based on one of the books that I had written. So it was just a dream visit. But the most special moment to me was that one of the fourth grade teachers said that the fourth grades had read the book about my mom called The Rainbow Tulip.
I know that book perfectly.
Okay. So about a little girl, true story, a little girl whose parents speak Spanish at home, and so at home she's Estelita, and at school she's Stella. And so in one of the fourth grades, a little boy stood up and he said, "I am the rainbow tulip in this class. I am the only Polish boy here."
Oh, wow.
So I just swooned because, of course, that's what every author wants, right? That whatever we write, in a sense, translates, and I don't mean in this case English-Spanish,
right?
But that any kind of child finds a way to connect with the book. And so that was a very special moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it was. Alba, you work with teachers, you work with parents. Do you have a special moment that you remember?
Oh, I also have a lot of those. The story that Pat was telling triggered one experience that we had. We in terms of working with teachers on designing interventions for struggling learners, try to get teachers to get kids to write their own stories and to publish their own books. And we had a student who was in special education. He'd been retained twice, who wrote a story that was just really excellent. Called Hamburger Wars, and it was based on the McDonald's menu. And the special ed teacher sent him around to the regular classrooms to read the book, and, you know, everybody just loved it. And then the teacher took the book and put it in the library with a library card, and the little boy just loved to go to the library to see how many kids had read his book.
Oh.
You know, and the books written by kids were as popular as Pat's books, you know. But the moment was we were observing in the classroom, and he comes running in, and he slams the door, and he stands against it, and he says, "Miss, I'm famous," because he'd gone into the library, and the little kids were asking him for his autograph.
Oh, I love it.
That's great. That's great.
Because of his book. And so he went over the course of a semester from being a remedial reader and writer to being a famous author. And
wow.
So, you know, you can't, that's priceless.
That is priceless. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing it. Pat, you know, one of the, to me, when I do school visits myself, one of the best moments is when the kids ask you questions.
Right.
Oftentimes, they're not questions, they're just comments. Okay, any other questions? And they raise their hands, like, "I have a brother and a sister." Right. Any other questions that need answers? Do you have any, like, funny questions that kids have asked you that you remember?
Well, a couple of really funny ones. You know, and I love kids because they're very specific and they're very literal.
Mm-hmm.
So this was in Michigan, a little boy who stood up and he said, "How do you get the print in the book so dark?" So I think, you know, for the little ones, they, and another one said, don't your arms get tired from writing that book over and over? So, I, you know, I love that. But the little ones are very little. When you say this person wrote the book, they know what write means.
Right.
So they figured that this is the woman who wrote the book, right? So I love those
questions.
Over
and over again.
Yeah, yeah. One of their favorites, of course, is, which is your favorite book? They
I
love that
it.
Question.
Which
and I always
favorite?
Tell them the next book.
The one you're working on?
Yeah, sure, because that's the book that's getting all my energy. So, of course, I love Tomas and the Library Lady, you know, and of course I love the book about my mother. And those are very special books. But and I tell them that it's like children, you know, every parent loves all of your children, every author loves all of his or her books, but the one that's getting my energy is the one that I'm working on.
And what are you working on right now?
I'm working on a book for teachers. A book for teachers on creativity.
Great. A bilingual book or for bilingual teachers or for...
No, all.
All right. It's not about language. It's...
Oh, that's the subtext. That's the subtext.
All right. I can't wait to hear more about that book. Maybe you can share more with us because then you will have to kill us, right?
Well, I'm revising now, so it's all okay.
All right, great. When is it coming out?
It'll be out spring of 2010.
Wow, great. And a year from now, so it's almost
mm-hmm.
there.
Almost there.
No, it takes forever. Sometimes, I'm not sure if readers realize how long it takes for a book to be published. From the time you submit the manuscript to the time you can actually hold the book in your hands. Don't you think, Pat?
Well, I waited 8 years for Tomas from the time the book was accepted.
Wow. 8 years.
That was very, it had, three illustrators worked on Tomas.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the hidden story.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Wow. Alba, what's your favorite book? Do you have a favorite book?
I think it's Book Fiesta.
Oh, do you?
Yes. I loved it when I got it and have used it in, you know, with some kids, and they love it. And so I can't wait for your next book.
Oh, that makes my night.
Lovely. I mean, look at the dog on the cover with glasses. It's too funny.
Well, you know, and I think that this is a great book for teachers as well because it has, and it, you know, to me this was kind of subtle, and that's why I kind of really appreciated it. There are so many really strong messages in the book in, you know, fun sorts of ways. The fact that it's telling kids that you can read and that you can read in any language, that you can read almost anywhere. It has ideas for parents. It says, nuestras familias nos cuentan cuentos mientras escuchamos y jugamos. So that tells them, you know, parents that they should do that, that they can read about all kinds of topics. And so it just it's a wonderful story for children, but it also has some really great messages for teachers and parents as well. And also, you know, at the very end, there's a long list of suggestions for how you can celebrate Children's Day, and they're great ideas for celebrating literacy and celebrating children in books. So it is my favorite book today.
It's beautiful. Pat, can I ask you a favor?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the book in front of you?
I can get it. I think I can get it. Uh-huh.
Can you read us a couple of pages? I'd love to hear the book read by you.
Excuse me, ladies, but we only have about 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
This is Esmeralda.
All right. So do you want me to make it?
One page. I just want to hear one page from
okay,
the author.
So we'll do it. We'll do it. Hooray. Today is our day. El Día de los Niños. Let's have fun today reading our favorite books. Tun, tun. Viva. Hoy es nuestro día, el día de los niños. Nos vamos a divertir con nuestros libros favoritos. Tun, tun.
Wow. Beautiful. Esmeralda, how are we doing?
It's wonderful. It's just perfect for ending our wonderful discussion. Thank you both, all of you, the three of you, for your answers, your questions, and all that we have learned today. And thank you with our listeners, who I'm sure have a lot more to think about and talk about, and we'll be looking for more books for children and about our Latino writers who are trying to so hard to get our cultures to our children and to schools. We are very, very grateful to you, and we are grateful to the American Association of Publishers and Borders for partnering with Las Comadres as we learn more about our heritage and continue to support our Latino writers. Remember, everyone, remember to buy books. Remember to give books as gifts, to display books by our Latino writers so that others can learn more about them and their work. They need your support. We need your support. Do let people know what you are reading and let them know that you're reading Latino authors. Please join us next month for our teleconference when Josefina Lopez will talk for Hungry Woman in Paris. Buenas noches, everyone, and thank you for being with us. Bye, Alba. Bye, Pat. Bye, Macarena.
Buenas noches.
Thank you, everyone.
Hasta luego.
Bye.